All right, welcome to Faith, Frauds, and Falsehoods. Every month, we take a deep dive into the history and social issues and theology of a different cult. From the infamous to the lesser known, we examine how these groups operate, the people that are drawn to them, and how they differ from true Christian teachings.
Through careful research and analysis, we aim to shed light on the complex and often controversial world of cults, and to provide insight into the unique challenges that they pose to individuals, families, and society as a whole, really. So whether you're a curious bystander, a former member, or simply interested in the intersection of religion and culture, we invite you to join us on this journey of discovery and understanding.
Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe to stay up to date with our latest content. And as always, thank you for joining us in this exploration of faith, frauds, and falsehoods. So Matt, who are we talking about?
Oh, we have one for y'all tonight. We are going to discuss Harold Camping and his group at the time, Family Radio. They could have different names. Family Radio was the group at the time. Harold Camping, some of you know by that.
Yep.
Some of you know him by Alameda Bible Fellowship.
Okay, yeah.
There's another name that his group's kind of known by. This man said the end of the world was happening.
I was going to say, you're kind of burying the lead here, right? The real reason people know him, right, is he told everyone that the world was going to end in 2011.
May 21st, 2011.
May 21st, 2011.
So just for
our specific date,
our listeners out there who, might be watching this in the future. What is today's date again?
Today is 2/26/2023.
So, yeah. So, a lot of us thought we might all die in 2020. The world was a very scary place in 2020.
It was.
The apocalypse didn't happen.
Nope.
Didn't happen in 2011.
Or 2012.
Or 2012.
2012 was a big one.
We got through the calendar snafu going on there.
2000 was a big year. Yeah.
It's funny. All these were dates that we thought might something happen. I don't know if anybody had 2020, but 2020 was really difficult in life.
2020 was rough.
I've got this in my head that I'm hoping we have viewers in 50 years who have no idea what 2020 was about. Kind of like my son has no idea what September 11th was.
Right.
Right? But to me and you, when we say September 11th, we get that reaction you just had.
Yep.
That was, wow.
I was meaning that it makes me feel old, but
Oh, well. But it was a horrific thing. 2020
was. It was a big deal.
2020 sucked. But my point is, we're still here.
Mm-hmm.
The Lord has not yet come back to reclaim us here.
Right.
But Harold Camping, man, he was pretty serious about it.
He was all over it. Spent some money, had some people doing billboards and RVs and signs and street preachers and all that goes along with it.
Yeah. So, this is our first episode. We're going to do a couple episodes like we normally do, split up.
Oh, yeah. We were going to do these live, weren't we? Oh, well.
Do these live.
Yeah, like on Facebook Live. We had talked about doing that. So maybe next month, we'll go back to doing the history episode on Facebook Live.
Oh, we were going to do history live, weren't we?
Yep. It's all
right. Guys, we're working we got so on much this going project, on. And we have a super secret project that's coming out really soon.
Yep.
That y'all are going to be intrigued about.
I hope so. I sure hope so.
Put a lot of work into it. Relatively.
Yeah. Depending on how you qualify work.
The end of the world.
Right. So let's talk about camping, right? What?
He thought it was the end of the world.
He thought it was the end of the world. He was born in the 20s.
Yeah. So let's go all the way back to the beginning here.
Yep. Like we do.
Since I'm on video now, I really need to rearrange my monitor so I don't have to look over here to look at my notes.
Yeah, I just moved my stuff in front of your face, so I can look at my notes without it looking like I'm looking off the screen so much.
Yeah, I could do that too. But, yes, yeah, so we're talking about he was born in the 20s. He was born in Colorado, and then he moved to California. Why do we keep talking about cult leaders in California?
Man, I wish I knew something about California in the 50s, 60s, 70s just drew in people that were unique.
Well, let me ask you something.
Unique is a good word. Yep.
Where do the most murders happen in the United States?
Chicago?
Let's assume that's true. That probably is. If it's not Chicago, it's New York or LA or Houston or something, right?
Yep.
But
pretty sure it's Chicago.
Those are also where a large part of the population is.
Yes. Yep.
By population, what's one of the largest states in the union?
California.
California. There's a lot of people there. There is a certain type of lifestyle in California that I guess maybe facilitates some of this. Also, it's a place of prosperity, or it was at one time, especially back in those times. We could argue, this ain't a political show, we could argue politics has killed some of that prosperity, but it's not all gone. There's a reason house prices are so expensive there, because jobs pay a lot there.
Yep, they do.
We live in a similar place that's becoming that way quickly.
Very quickly.
There are a lot of cult leaders from Texas, too. So,
Yep. I think there's just a lot of cult leaders all over the place. I think cults are far more prevalent than we really think about, which is why we do this podcast.
Well, you know, Brian, you have a God-shaped hole in your heart.
That's right. That's right.
And you're going to fill that with something.
Mm-hmm.
And while I think that's a cheesy little, it's not a meme, whatever they call it, there is a little nugget of wisdom in there. People have an innate need.
Wasn't that Jack Chick? Weren't we just talking about him before we started recording? Wasn't that his shtick was a God-shaped hole? It was one of his first tracks.
Was it?
I think so.
Well, I'm not saying it's completely inaccurate. It is a bit of a shtick, yes. But there is an innate need in human beings for some sort of spirituality, for a connection to their creator.
Yep.
And I think some of these cult leaders take advantage of that.
Right.
So let's start with where we're talking about born in the 20s. He's born in July 19th, 1921.
Mm-hmm.
He later, his family moved to California. He got a degree in civil engineering from Berkeley.
Wow.
Well, that's important.
Okay.
Because remember that later on when he comes up with when the world's going to end, he uses a lot of math to do that.
He does. He uses a lot of math. Yep.
He was a civil engineer. He got married to his wife, Shirley, in 1943. Now, also, remember those dates. I'm talking about 1942 is when he got his degree. 1943 is when he got married. World War II. We really got into World War II right about then.
Yep.
During World War II, he worked as a government contractor. Or he worked with government contractors. So he did participate in the war effort, even though he wasn't a soldier. I think that's important because graduated from Berkeley, civil engineer, government contractor. This is kind of Mr. All-American here.
Right.
You know, he really was, Mr. All-American, Mr. Successful. And then he started a construction business. And the construction business is super important. It was camping construction. He actually built churches all over this country in the 40s and 50s. Go ahead.
There was someone else who did that. Was it Alamo that participated in something like that? Building churches?
No.
Or got in I want to use the phrase got in bed with, right? You know, participated, partnered with another group that was building churches. I think it was Alamo.
Was it?
I think so.
I know there's a guy from our hometown that was doing some things like that. I don't know if he was a cult leader, but wasn't the nicest guy. But he owned a business that built churches.
Yeah. I don't know. I'll have to go back and look at our notes.
Okay.
I think it was a llama.
So with this construction company, we don't know a whole lot about it, but we know he was very successful with it in a very short period of time. And I'll tell you why we know he was successful. Because while he was running this company, Well, I don't want to skip over these other things. Well, I'm going to go ahead and skip, and then we're going to go back a little bit.
Yeah.
So he eventually started Family Radio, which was a single radio station, KEAR, that they bought. He was actually brought in by Richard Palmquist to help start this. He was brought in to be the money guy. Richard Palmquist had started successfully several other Christian-based radio stations. He had done radio stations for missionaries and several other radio stations, some radio networks. He was really big into this whole radio thing. And remember, that was a fairly newer thing back then.
Right, yeah.
Most people didn't have TVs and stuff. So radio was a really effective way to communicate. And there were still lots of new radio stations that could be made in open airwaves still. Versus now there's way less open airwaves. They've all been claimed mostly, you know?
Yeah.
But he was brought in the money as the money guy because he was effectively able to retire after a fairly short amount of time. 10, 20 years in the construction business and able to retire. I think that's pretty important important thing. The other thing I wanted to go back and mention is that he was a member of the Christian Reformed Church.
Right.
Do you know much about the Christian Reformed Church?
I don't. I mean, I've heard the name. I know that they split from the Dutch at some point.
But yeah, his parents were Dutch.
Other than that, yeah.
And so they were a Calvinist church. They still are. They're they're actually a somewhat large denomination. They used to be a very large denomination. They at one time were in fellowship with the more conservative Presbyterians and other more conservative Reformed theology Calvinist denominations.
Right.
And considered quite respectable, even with the Reformed Calvinist versions of the Baptists and things, they were kind of in affiliation with them. He started a Bible study group, and this is important. He started a Sunday school class there. It was a Sunday school class at the Alameda Christian Reformed Church in 1950. And it was quite popular. I read some things that as much as 60% of the church actually went to his Sunday school class.
Wow.
Now, I've been involved in some small churches that were like that before. Have you ever seen that happen where, you know, so-and-so, brother so-and-so starts a Sunday school class and it becomes pretty popular?
Yeah, in the super small churches, that's... Yeah. The church that I grew up in, we really had one big class, and then there were a couple little small offshoots, but for the most part, it was the one class led by the one guy.
We at one church I was at, we had this one of our brothers started a new believers class, and the church was undergoing rapid growth at the time, and the new believers class was extremely popular. But one of the issues we had was it was so popular, we had people trying to take the New Believers class 2, 3, 4 times.
Right.
Because they enjoyed it so much, they didn't want to go on. The idea was you take the New Believers class and then join a regular Sunday school class and kind of mature from milk to meat. But that didn't really happen. They kept wanting to keep on with the milk, and we had to kind of work on that, you know?
Yeah.
Well, his Sunday school class was super popular, too. I don't know that it was New Believers class so much. As a matter of fact, that's not the type of preaching he did. He was very detailed in his preaching.
Yeah, very. Some of it's hard to listen to because it's hard to keep up.
Yes. And so me and you talked about this previously, right? So he went on and on and on. He was the type to use lots and lots and lots of scripture. You know, some people who preach just use a few scripture. Some people who preach through the scripture almost directly. That's expository, right?
Right.
I tell you, I like to do it that way, depending on the scripture I'm talking about. You know, it's really easy to be expository in Matthew or John, maybe even Ephesians or something, right?
Yeah.
But it's really hard to be expository if you're in... I don't know, anywhere in the Old Testament, really. Job's pretty easy, but if you're, you know, in Leviticus, it's pretty hard to be expository and not get ran out, tarred and feathered.
Right.
And then you have some people, preachers, who kind of pick out a couple of points and make their points and then jump around the scriptures. Sometimes right, sometimes wrong. But they kind of do it based on the subject. And I forget the name that is. He kind of did subject-based, but with lots and lots of scriptures.
Yes.
Right? Yep. Almost purpose-driven life levels of lots of scriptures. Except he was he yeah. a King James version?
Yes,
version?
King James only. Yep.
King James only. Which is ironic because he used other languages, right?
I mean, yes, he did use other languages. I don't know necessarily that I'd say that was ironic.
Well, that if you're King James only, you would find some validity in the Greek or the Hebrew?
Yeah, I mean, because the expectation is that the King James was translated from the Greek and Hebrew.
Okay.
So you can still find validity there, right? You wouldn't find validity in other English translations, right? And most King James only groups fall into, if you're translating it from anything, any English into Chinese, you have to use a King James Bible to do the translation, right? You can't use any other translation, right? You can't even use the Greek or Hebrew, and it'd still be accurate. It has to be from the King James.
Ah, okay.
Which gets into the real deep, weird King James only groups.
Which we'll probably cover some more of those.
Yep. Oh, I'm sure.
So let's get to where the real star of the whole history here is in 1958.
Yep.
So what happened in 1958?
So in 58, he partnered with Palmquist and Lindquist, right?
The Quist.
Yeah, the Quists. And they started Family Radio, the first station, like you said, KEAR. They were pretty conservative, right, to start. That was kind of their thing, right? They were a conservative, reformed group, right? So they played conservative talk shows. They did hymns and probably eventually got into some Southern gospel type of things. But for the most part,
they
stayed with the very traditional conservative.
Yes, they even stayed away from the Southern gospel for many, many, many years.
For a while, yep.
They were very conservative. And something to note about this, they started growing rapidly into a network of stations.
Absolutely.
Some stations they owned and controlled the programming, some that just rebroadcast some of their programming, some partner stations. You've heard those stations that are like rock music during the day, and then they're the gospel station at night or something, you know?
Yeah.
But they grew very rapidly, and one important thing to know is, especially because of the time, there were markets where there wasn't a Christian radio station.
Right.
And they became the only ones. There were many markets where they were the only option. Now, there are other ministries that were growing around the same time in very similar ways. The other thing to note is that he financed Family Radio, getting started, and he did not collect a salary.
Right.
So he apparently had enough money from this construction business where he never collected a salary his whole life from then on. He sold the construction business and went into this Family Radio thing and kept into it until, what, 2017?
2014, if I remember right.
And didn't, yep. Yeah, he didn't collect any paychecks. Mm. So he must have done pretty well with some construction.
Right.
You know,
good with construction, good with some investments.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure there had to be some investment component of that as well. But he did pretty well with the construction. Some important things I think you might have mentioned was that this was a non-denominational.
Mm-hmm.
The other people he partnered with were members of other denominations. Bible Baptist, Conservative Presbyterian, stuff like that. But he... this was a non-denominational station, but it was very reformed, Calvinistic type, very conservative stuff. And later on, in 1965, Palmquist left. And that's when Camping took over as president of it.
Mm-hmm.
So before then, he was part of it, but he was not the only one running things. The Palmquist guy is very interesting because he actually, like I said, he started radio stations previously. He owned a few different newspapers. And this other thing I made a note about here, he started a barter network. This sounds like something me and you would have come up with.
Right.
So he owned a radio station, KDNO, and he okay. was trying to figure out how to get it supported. It was a Christian radio station as well, not part of Family Radio.
Mm-hmm.
And so what he did was he went to advertisers and he said, hey, I want to have you advertise on my station. But here's the thing. You don't have to pay me any money to advertise. You can just advertise. But what I want you to do is I want you to accept trade note interchange certificates. So I'm going to ask people to support our station. If they donate $10, I'm going to give them $10 worth of trade note interchange. And then you accept that for your product. So if I'm an advertiser and I sell rugs, I'll say, okay, I get to advertise on here. I don't have to pay you any cash to advertise, but I'm going to agree to accept $5,000 worth of trade note interchange certificates.
Right.
And people who support the station, if they were to donate $10, they get $10 worth of trade note interchange to go spend at the rug store or any of the other advertisers. Maybe it's the rug store and the florist and mm-hmm. the funeral home and what have you, right? So by doing this, he got the cash from the donations, and of course they count as donations. He's right. not actually selling advertising, but the advertisers are getting advertising and benefit out of it. And they're paying for it all. And so people who donate aren't actually just donating. They're actually buying services from the advertisers.
Right.
But he directly. Collects the cash.
Indirectly, yeah.
Right. Well, the IRS came in and said, so you just started your own currency and you can't just do that. Is this just not NFTs?
Gotta love the IRS.
Is that
NFTs and crypto? Yep.
I mean, mm-hmm. isn't this just NFTs in 1965?
Yep.
So this Palmquist guy, I don't know that he fits in our cult leader thing, but I've got it on my list to do some more research into this guy. He is.
Yep. Look him up.
Very interesting.
Yeah. So Family Radio quickly grew. You know, you mentioned that they grew, but they at one point were in over 150 countries. As one of the world's largest Christian radio stations.
Yes. Yes.
That's huge. I don't even know that AFR or whoever owns K-Love and Air One, I don't even know that they're in 150 countries. And they're the big names that I think of.
Well, nowadays.
Actually, I think the same company owns all three of those,
but remember, radio is not near as popular now as it once was.
True. True.
Because now think about like TBN.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny. Remind me to talk about Sky Angel when we get a little further here. I don't know if you remember Sky Angel from the early 2000s.
Do.
You do?
Yeah, I do.
Did you ever have Sky Angel?
I did not.
I did not either, but I always wanted it. Back then, I was playing with free to air, so...
Yeah, when I was in middle school, we decided we didn't want TV in the house. So we didn't have TV until, I don't know, I think I almost graduated from high school before we had cable again.
We didn't have cable most of my time as a child, but that wasn't because we decided we didn't want it. That's because we didn't afford it. But
right. Yep. Anyway, so the goal of Family Radio, right, the early on goals, and we've been all sorts of rabbit trailing today, was as a way to help spread the gospel to the world, right? Which is what all Christian radio stations say, right? That's right. Their thing, right? It's you can put it out over the airwaves and anybody and everybody can pick it up.
So they played hymns, but they weren't primarily a music station. They also played programs right. and preaching from various groups, and they would often air those for free, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So they would air those for free. The catch was that the groups could not ask for support.
Right.
So often when you listen to Christian radio stations, you'll hear, you know, the so-and-so group come on, and maybe it's Adrian Rogers or something, and mm-hmm. I like listening to Adrian Rogers. I don't always agree 100%, but I like listening to Adrian Rogers. And, you know, at the end, they'll ask for donations, basically, to help support this or buy this book to support it or something. They wouldn't allow that, but you could play your program. So if you had a church and you want to play a program.
Right.
You know, this is where I kind of wish I'd done some more digging, and maybe we can for the next part of this. I wonder if some of our other cult leaders end up being on there. I do know some mainstream Christian leaders were on there.
Yeah, lots of mainstream Christian leaders were there and currently are there, which we'll get to that as we move on.
Yes.
But we're rapidly approaching our 30-minute mark, so we need to step it up. Quit chasing so many rabbits.
Okay. Okay. So if we're going to hit our 30 minutes or close to it, so let's talk about in 1961.
Yep.
So he started a call-in show called Open Forum.
Yep.
Open Forum was this really cool show where Harold Camping would get on and say, hey, call me and ask me questions, and I'll tell you where that comes from in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Now.
Yep. He would explain the Bible to them. He would teach them things. It was his way of sharing his beliefs and his teachings.
Now, it's a bit of a rabbit trail, and I don't go too far, but I do want to bring this up. Didn't you at one time listen to a podcast that was very similar to that, that was very influential on you?
Still do. Yep.
What is that
still
podcast?
Still do. Listen to lots of them. Orthodoxy Live with Father Evan Armitas is a big one.
No.
Lord of Spirits is a big one.
It's not on...
Hank Hanegraaff's.
That's the one.
Ask Hank. Yep.
Because the others all...
Bible Answer Man. That's...
Right. The others all come from a denominational...
Right.
...angle. His, although it's from that same thing, he's Orthodox as well.
Right.
He doesn't really advertise that, but he doesn't hide it at all.
Right.
Which I find...
Yeah, it's not actually on the Orthodox station, so...
Right, but I find it interesting. But my point is, there are valid things, other shows similar to this.
Yeah.
And this started off as a pretty positive thing, and people really enjoyed this.
Absolutely.
People love being able to call in and just live ask questions like that. It's like Coast to Coast AM for the Christian station, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what it was, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So
his... sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, so Open Forum was the place, you know, where so much of his teachings come from. It's still out there, right? That's, as we get into the theology next week, you know, a lot of it is going to come from... Right, things that he said on Open Forum, right? Because it's still publicly available. People have it digitized. It's out there everywhere, right?
Right.
So you can go and you can actually listen to him talk about these different things. It was ran all the way up until, 2011? When he had his stroke?
Yeah. Even after he was embarrassed by things, or things didn't happen that he said was going to happen,
right.
He still kept coming back on the show. He
kept going, yep.
And taking questions. In 1970, he published a book called The Biblical Calendar of History.
Yep.
This is where he started making some weird claims, and people were like, huh? So he claimed that the date of creation was 11,013 B.C., and since he knew the day of creation, he figured he knew the day of the flood as well, talking about Noah's Ark and all that, at 4990 BC. And I won't go into this whole reference patriarch thing, but that's something we're going to come into in his theology and how he figured that out. Was he had this idea of a reference patriarch, the begot didn't mean begot in the Bible, and in the way we assume it does. So he was saying some weird things about he could figure out when things happened by figuring out the numbers and stuff in the Bible, right?
Right.
In 1988, he's been leading family radio for many years. So at this point, he's been leading family radio for 30 years.
Yep.
He's been a member of this church since before then. He's been, what would we say, 1950, he started a Sunday school class?
Mm-hmm.
So 48 years he's been teaching Sunday school. At this church. Wow. 48 years.
That's 38 years.
38 years. You're right. 38 years. 38 years he's been teaching Sunday school.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's still a long time.
Mm-hmm.
My entire life. And he left the church. Now, let me tell you about leaving the church. He was not leaving the church because he felt like he needed to leave the church, but he later said that he was made to leave the church because when he published these weird things. Now, I noticed the book was published in 1970 and he didn't leave till 1988. So this was a long time coming. Mm-hmm. The people in the church were like, this guy's teaching the wrong stuff. The leadership in his church decided they didn't want him teaching Sunday school anymore.
Right.
So what he did was he left, and most of his Sunday school people left with him, and he formed Alameda Bible Fellowship, which if I just told you the name Alameda Bible Fellowship, you would assume that was a church, right?
Yeah.
But he claimed it was not a church. They actually met in a VFW hall or Veterans Center or something there in Alameda?
I think it was the Veterans Center.
Where they still meet to this day, by the way, and still say they're not a church.
Right.
I read an account, it was back from 2019, where somebody went and visited, and there's no signage that says church or anything. There's just a little thing about the Alameda Bible Fellowship. They just kind of temporarily set up in that building, and that's where they meet.
Okay.
In 1992, he published a book called 1994,
Yeah, which I couldn't get in time for this, but it's on order and it should be here next week, so I can hopefully have it read before our theology discussion.
Okay, awesome.
It's 500 pages, so I'm going to have to do a lot of reading, but it's Lent, so I have plenty of time.
So do you want to go over the summary, or you want me to go over the summary of it?
No, you go ahead. I am reading your notes. Okay. I like it.
So I don't have the book either. So I used our friend, ChatGPT, to help me with the summary of that.
Okay.
His ChatGPT apparently knows all about this. So in the book, he said the end of the church age would be May 21st, 1988. Notice he published the book in 1992.
Which was... Yeah. So, but he also left the Christian Reformed Church in 1988.
Bingo!
Yeah.
So by the end of the church age, what he meant is that people can no longer be saved through the church.
Right.
It's a very important thing, especially since he was a Calvinist.
Mm-hmm.
He said that the start of Christ's return might be September 6, 1994. I found some people saying, oh, he said it would be this date. Then a lot of other people said, well, he said in the book it might be. This is what I'm hoping you find out in that book.
Okay.
But this... ChatGPT also said it said might be September 6, 1994. He said there would be a great earthquake followed by 5 months of torment, culminating in the return of Jesus on October 21st, 1994. He also mentioned that 2011 could be the end of the world as well.
Okay.
Yeah, so he wasn't complete. He said he was 99.9% sure. So he left himself an out.
Right, of course.
Right. So in 94, he's as popular as ever. He's running this Alameda Bible Fellowship. It's his Sunday school class that's now not part of a church. He's running family radio. He's literally telling people, you know, the church age is over with. Then in 94, you know, the day came and went, and that's when he came up with the new date of May 21st, 2011. He said, oh, he was wrong. He forgot to figure in some stuff. And we can talk about how he figured it in the next episode.
Yeah.
In 2001, so now we're a few years later, he's just gone on further, and he's actively telling people, quit your church. Yes. You can only be saved outside the church.
Mm-hmm.
The church has been taken over by Satan. Then, very importantly, this is where Family Radio started to change a whole lot. So, Family Radio provided this free broadcasting to all these different people. And, you know, I know how some pastors... don't like TBN because they don't like some of the stuff that's preached on TBN. Yeah. But yet they'll still have a show on TBN preaching differently. But it's like, well, I don't like what they're preaching. They're preaching the wrong thing, but they're letting me preach the right thing. So I'll kind of ignore it, you know? Well, that's kind of what they were doing with Harold Camping. They were preaching different stuff. And like, yeah, he's preaching the wrong stuff, but I'm really not going to call him out on it because he owns the radio station.
Mm-hmm.
But he started editing their programs. They would submit programs to play, and his people would remove any mentions of pastors, elders, deacons, or church. He'd air your preaching, but not if you mentioned your church. Not if you were Pastor so-and-so, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He started editing that stuff out and actively telling his people they didn't need that.
Right.
It is important to note that the donations increased at Family Radio with this, too. Because he was telling people they didn't need to tithe to their church, so if you're going to tithe, you might as well tithe
to Family Radio. Tithe to them. Yep. Yeah, we'll definitely dig into this whole era of the church age coming to an end in the theology section, because that's a big part of what he was trying to build around him, right? And fairly successful at doing.
Yeah. And so we're almost at the end here. So going on, he said, you know, he had said, well, May 21st, 2011 will be the day. He created this huge campaign. They had RVs going around the country, like you mentioned. This huge thing. He was really getting people. Some people were selling their houses. Some things will come up in sociology is what Family Radio was doing with the money at the time. Mm-hmm. Weirdly, they were signing contracts the day before. They were signing contracts on May 20th. And they were closing on property and things on May 20th. Right. Even though he was saying that the world was going to end on May 21st.
Yeah.
And surprise, surprise, that didn't happen.
It didn't. Nope.
So as soon as it didn't happen, he didn't respond for a couple days. And then he came back out and said, oh, well, it started spiritually or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. And then he said it'll be October 21st, 2011.
Yep. And he retired before October 21st, 2011. So
he never had to speak on it again. He just kind of left it at that.
Yep.
And then he retired from being in the public at all.
Right. And you were telling me that apparently shortly before his death that he recanted and said that it was all wrong to begin with.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes. He completely recanted, said that the preachers who had criticized him over the years and said he should not be trying to tell the time were right. So I'm trying to remember what it was. We'll bring this up in the sociology thing. Mm-hmm. People will say, you don't know you don't know the something in the hour.
You don't know the day or the hour.
Yeah, you don't know the day or the hour. And he would say, no, but I know the month and the time.
Right.
But when he recanted, he said that they were completely right in using scripture to say that he was wrong, that there was no way he could know, and that he should not have been trying to do that. He completely recanted of his whole thing.
Yeah.
And then he had a stroke and died.
Yep.
So he's no longer around. Weirdly,
but
there are people who still believe the end of the world happened
May 21st, 2011. Yep.
So
yeah, there's still groups out there. If you start digging much into YouTube, like I have the last couple of weeks, trying to find his preaching and his teaching, you'll find groups that are still actively posting his open forum and his Bible studies and their own videos and Bible studies trying to proclaim the same things that he was.
And we should also mention that Family Radio still exists, has moved on from Harold Camping, and does not necessarily hold those same views. Is that correct?
They don't publicly hold those views.
Okay.
Right. The general manager back in 2017 or whatever said that they were repenting of all the stuff from Camping from their history. But when you go and you look at certain things on their sites, there might be some question as to whether they still look at the church age as having ended and a push towards this idea of local fellowships rather than local churches, which a local fellowship is nothing more than a church just without the name. But that's a theology question that we'll talk about next week.
Yes. So I think that covers our history for now.
I think so. I think that does it. I think we'll see what happens.
All right. Well, listen, till next time, y'all.
Thank you for joining us here on Faith, Frauds, and Falsehoods. Don't forget that we have our website, faithfraudsfalsehoods.com, where we post a more detailed blog with references so that you can go and take a look at all of this information for yourself. Also, remember to share this with a friend and and help us get the word out there before everyone else. We'll see you in the next one.